Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is KJ and Lyons. KJ Carson and John Lyons right now on WEEI.
Oh, yeah, it's Saturday in the greatest sports month in the history of man. KJ and Lyons, 617-779-7937. Text line 37937. John, great Saturday for sports. How will it feel Sunday morning if the Patriots lay a dud?
Yeah, it is a great Saturday out there for sports. Great night of college football tonight, too. Tomorrow is one of those games, KJ. I think when you look at where the Jaguars are at, they are talented. Mayo's right. And I think they're more talented than that 1-5 record suggests. But they've just been all out of sorts, haven't played well. They've turned the ball over, made dumb mistakes. So if the Patriots can't clean up what's really ailed them in recent weeks defensively with penalties, and they lose to this Jaguars team, I think it would be a really discouraging loss, because this is a team that, although there's talent there, like I mentioned, I think this is a very winnable game for the Patriots. Honestly, KJ, probably the second most winnable game they've had so far this year, behind that Miami game, which they ultimately lost closely, and we know how demoralizing that felt after.
Yeah, if you've listened to any of the show in the previous weeks leading into the season, I thought this could be a win for the Patriots, but I am a bit jealous of the personnel that Jacksonville has compared to the personnel for the Patriots. It almost feels like a David and Goliath battle, where you're like, okay, maybe David is really your Drake May hope of slinging some type of stone for 300 yards and three touchdowns, no picks, and runs for 40 yards on his own. I mean, that would be ideal. But you don't want to wake up this Goliath. Kind of in the NFL, is like some things can get turned around. Jobs can be saved in a game that people feel like, or teams feel like, they can get healthy on. And that's what I think would be so unfortunate if the Patriots don't show the effort, don't get the win, don't show that this team is moving forward, is looking like they're a host that the Jags can get healthy on and then try and start to change the narrative, right? Because everything discussing about the Jags right now is like, if they lose, is Doug Peterson still the coach? You may have to readdress. You just gave Trevor Lawrence all this money. Do you start peeling some of your defensive assets to other teams before the trade deadline? Do you start to break this thing up? But if you're the Patriots and us, the fan base, the last thing you want to say is, oh, yeah, get healthy on us because we're growing and we're trying to figure this thing out. No, this is one of those situations where from an emotional and mental standpoint, the Patriots need to say, we're going to give you a fight. We may not have the same amount of talent on our team that you do, but at least we can show that we're in this together and beat you, where on a record paper-wise, it looks like it's an even matchup, an even point differential. It's only like 5 points. But really, this is a Patriots team that it would be a very good win because you beat a better quality roster than what you have.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the interesting things about this, because the Jaguars are 1-5, but you look at this roster, Trevor Lawrence is obviously a really talented player. Travis Etienne, I know he's questionable, but he's a really talented player. Brian Thomas has been great so far this year. He's a first-round pick.
Christian Kirk.
Yeah, exactly. Evan Ingram's a good player. Like, there's a lot of
Gabe Davis.
Right, there's a lot of talented guys on that offense.
Did you say Josh Allen?
The other Josh Allen, right? Defensively, right. So there's a lot of talented guys on that offense. And then you look defensively. The weird thing is defensively, I'm not saying they're a great defense talent-wise, but Josh Allen's a good player. Trayvon Walker was number one overall pick. Devin Lloyd is a solid player. And you look at some of these games. I mean, Tua threw for 338 against him. Josh Allen, 263 in a huge blowout on Monday night. C.J. Stroud threw for 345 against them. Joe Flacco threw for 359 yards against this Jaguars defense. And just last week, Caleb Williams threw for 226 in what ended up being the Bears cruising to a win. So they have not come anywhere close to playing up to the talent they have. And what's dangerous about that is if you catch a team like that on the one day that they do play up to their talent, then it's an uphill battle for a team like the Patriots, who just frankly aren't as talented as this Jaguars team.
KJ and Lyons, WEEI, good Saturday to you, 617-779-7937, text line 37937. We're just about 30 minutes away from Just the Jag, week 7, who's on the hot seat in different roles, players, coaches, you name it. That's about 3:45-ish, somewhere in there. So on a scale of 1 to 10, John, with 10 being a worst and 1 being absolutely okay, you're fine with it. If the Patriots lose this game tomorrow morning, the fan base's angst towards the team, what number would you give it?
So I would give it like a 6.5 to a 7, and a lot of it would depend on how Drake May looks, right? Like, let's say Drake May, I mentioned those quarterbacks against the Jags already. If he throws for 300 yards but they lose a one-possession game, then I think people will say, oh, well, at least Drake May looks like he's getting better and he had a good game. But if he doesn't play well or they get blown out, then, yeah, that's why I go, you know, 6.5, maybe even closer to 7, because you look at the schedule going forward for the Patriots. Like, I think Tennessee's a bad team.
Wait, let's just about tomorrow, right?
I know. Let me get to my point, though. So I think, like, Tennessee's a bad team, and some of these other teams are beatable, but this Jags team is one that maybe you don't look at them as bad as you say, oh, Tennessee in week 9, but you look at them just right after that where, like, yeah, this is a game where the Patriots, their roster's not that good, but they're good enough to beat a team that is playing this poorly in the Jaguars.
Yeah, that's the part I can't get to, especially from a fan base perspective. Because last week was the understandable week, right? You put Drake May in there. There was no expectations to beat Houston. You knew they were tough. You know that they may be in the conversation of the AFC Championship. They may be the team that plays in Kansas City to see who goes to the Super Bowl. They're that talented. They're at least one of three or four teams you would be in that conversation. The Patriots are not in that conversation. So you're like, okay, as long as Drake May shows to be competent, people would be, the fan base would be happy. They would still be engaged with the team. They look forward to other things. This week, they expect a win. I don't care what the line says. It's still at 6. We'll know it. We'll talk about Ramondre Stevenson, some of these injuries, and what's going on with the defense and so forth. That's coming in minutes. But I think the fan base would be on a 10, 9.5, 10. If this team loses to Jacksonville in London, not only did I get up on a Sunday morning where I could have snuck to Market Basket or Star Market or Shaw's or something like that and got my stuff done, I didn't. I saw them get blown out by a team that's clearly bad and was about to fire their team. It's just all the optics just look so bad. If the Patriots lose this game, I think the fan base's angst would be at about a 9, just because they're like, okay, yeah, last week we got it. This week is supposed to be the win. Like what? Where are you going to show that you're taking a step forward? It would feel like it would be a step back losing to Jacksonville, knowing that last week was the first step forward.
And you look at this Jacksonville team. I mentioned Chicago cruising to a win against them last week, but Cleveland's one of the worst teams in the NFL, and they beat Jacksonville. Buffalo beat them by 37. Against Houston, it was a close game, but that's also a divisional game, and we know sometimes those can be a little bit crazy. But this is a Jaguars team that, again, I think they're more talented than the Patriots top to bottom roster-wise, but they've just been so out of whack and making so many mistakes that it would be disappointing to see the Patriots lose this game tomorrow. Again, I wouldn't put it at a 9.5 to a 10 because I also think there's some people in the fan base that kind of want the Patriots to lose to get a higher draft pick, which I disagree with. I think that's dumb. But I think there are people that want that to happen. So if it does happen tomorrow and it's a close loss, but Drake May plays well, I think there are going to be some people that walk away from it feeling okay.
Yeah, that gets me right there with the, you know, taking the losses. I get that and trying to tank, but you can't take a whole season without someone potentially getting hurt and all these. Like, if you're going to do the tank thing, like, wait till like the last 3 to 4 weeks of the season. And the reason why I say that is because if you want them to lose every single game at this point, are you really a fan? Like, don't you want to see some effort?
Yeah, and you and I had this discussion last December when we were looking at the future of, you know, Drake May, Jaden Daniels, and that draft.
Right.
And we said then, first of all, tanking doesn't really work in the NFL just because of the nature of the sport. But also, it's one of those things that if you have any whiff of, like, hey, we're not trying our best to win, football is a sport that if you get that loser DNA infected into your team, it is really hard to get rid of. I mean, I just mentioned the Cleveland Browns earlier. How many years have they lost games in December and got a top 5 pick and they've never really gotten any better? Like, they've made the playoffs a couple times in 20 years. So, like, you don't want to become a team like that that is just bad year in and year out. And every year you think it's going to be different because you got a better draft pick, and it never actually is because the whole culture around your team is losing. And especially now that hopefully you have the quarterback, right? It'd be one thing Like last year, I thought tanking was the wrong thing to do, but at least I could see some people's logic because the Patriots needed a quarterback badly. Now you potentially have that quarterback. So what am I tanking for? The best offensive tackle instead of the second best? Like what? Like so I'm willing to let my program be a loser so I can make, or I can get the best receiver instead of the second best in the top 10. Like it just, to me, that doesn't really make a lot of sense.
Well, you never end up having control. Remember going into the last week of last season, the Patriots still had a shot to have the number two pick, right? I think we could be talking about Jaden Daniels and his progression with this team right now, but because Washington decided to play Sam Howell versus the Cowboys instead of Jacoby Brissett, which was like even more incompetent, there you go. That's how they end up with that number two pick in Washington. So here's the thing with the tanking and with tomorrow is, I respect anybody in the fan base who's willing to stick through this tough time because there's a generation of people who haven't really seen this. Okay, when Cam Newton was here, it was a changeover. Then you get into COVID. It gets a strange, very strange time. Then Mac Jones gets here. There's a lot of hope. There's a positive sign after 1 year. Years two and three become disasters. So now with some of these teams that have gone through, when you look at these other teams, you're like, well, Washington. Well, last night I pointed out, do you want to be a Washington franchise that pretty much loses its name, has to get rid of its owner? You lose pretty much 13 out of 15 years in a row. I don't know if anybody here wants to sign up for a 15-year negative program. And so that's the thing. It's almost like I would rather see these guys compete and pull it. Like Cincinnati is a very good marker game, right? Because by the Patriots beating Cincinnati in that first week, it did something to Cincinnati that Cincinnati's trying to still recover from. If the Patriots can do that against the Jaguars team that's much worse than that Bengals team they're playing, like Joe Burrow still in the conversation for MVP because of his numbers, right? But if you can beat a team that you should beat, there's only a 5-point differential between yourself and the Jags. And we talk about how sexy the Jags have been as a talk over the last couple of years. Their point differential hasn't been anything great. I think last year it was only 6 points, and the year before it was 54. The Patriots last year was the worst than probably anybody can remember. It was minus 130. It could be heading that way, but I think the fan base wants to see. I want to see them in a fight. I don't mean to use fighting as an analogy, but when they say, let's meet up at 3 o'clock by the fence post, when you show up at 3 o'clock, you should not be showing up to just get wailed in the face. Nobody wants to see that. And that's why I don't really like this whole thing like, hey, I don't want to see them win so that way we can get the top pick. Yeah, what if that guy blows his knee in his final college game? I've seen that happen to a real guy. So you can't bank on the future. Man, just take care of what's in front of you now. This Jags game should be a game that the Patriots win.
Yeah, and I think another point in all this, KJ, is you look at, okay, you have a rookie quarterback starting. Jalen Polk is a rookie whose role is kind of in flux right now. I know he might get fewer snaps tomorrow. But you have a lot of young players out there. Layden Robinson's another rookie who have an offense. And point being, what's better for those guys' development? Losing a bunch of games or being competitive, winning some games, maybe even winning some games late, so that way next year and the year after, when they actually have more talent and they have a chance to be a good team, those guys have that experience. Like, I think a good model to look at is the Buffalo Bills. I think it was Josh Allen's rookie year. They went 7-9 or 6-10, and they were kind of competitive. And that, or maybe it was Sean McDermott's first year. And then they were bad for a couple years. But at least some of those younger players and coaches, they knew what it was like to be in close games, to be competitive. So that way, when they got the talent around them, all of a sudden, boom, they're in the playoffs. They're a threat to win the Super Bowl. And I know they haven't got over that hump. But I think Patriots fans right now, if they were being honest, would trade places with the Bills pretty quickly. So I think there's merit to, in a year or two, Drake May goes into a game, and he already has experience from winning close games, winning tough games, fights, as you called it. I think that's a lot better than just saying, oh, well, let's get the number two pick instead of the number seven pick. Like, I think the value on their development is a lot greater than that.
KJ and Lyons on your radio, on your app. The Odyssey app is free. Type in WEEI. Miss any of the show. If you have to step away and come back, we got you. 617-779-7937. Text line 37937 still to come. Is the 86 Red Sox story better than the 2004 story? I make a case, plus more football talk, NFL. But right now it's time to trend with Zach Coe.
The exclusive home for Patriots Monday and Friday.
Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
Patriots in London getting ready for the Jaguars tomorrow morning. Final injury report was released yesterday. Running back Ramondre Stevenson is listed as questionable, but told the media he should be ready to go, while tackle Verdian Lowe was ruled out with an ankle injury. Kickoff from London set for 9:30 tomorrow morning. Bruins' three-game road trip rolls on tonight as they are in Salt Lake City taking on the Utah Hockey Club. Puck drop from the Delta Center set for 9 p.m. Yankees looking to punch their ticket to the World Series tonight in Cleveland after last night's 8-6 Game 4 win. First pitch from Progressive Field set for 8:08. Meanwhile, in the National League, the Mets staved off elimination with a 12-6 home win over the Dodgers. LA will have another chance to advance to the World Series tomorrow night back in Los Angeles. Some Celtics roster news. The team has waived guard Lonnie Walker IV. He will likely be joining the G League's main Celtics. Finally, it's college football Saturday. Games today are headlined by top-ranked Texas hosting fifth-ranked Georgia. And don't forget, you can catch Westwood One's coverage of that game right here on WEEI starting at 7. My name is Zach Coe, and that's what's trending on WEEI and WEEI.com. More KJ and Lions coming up after this.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Back to KJ and Lyons on WEEI.
KJ and Lyons hanging out with you on WEEI, 617-779-7937, text line 37937. A very pivotal game tomorrow in London. It's going to be for the world to see at 9:30 in the morning. And I think that's what's going to be very interesting, where you just heard Jerod Mayo say there are going to be some benchings. And so we still don't know who those benchings are until pretty much they roll the players out, John. But do you think it's on the offensive side of the ball, defensive side of the ball, or both sides of the ball?
So I think it's both, but the defensively stands out a little bit more to me, KJ, here, because this was a unit coming into the year. I mean, last year they were, what, top 10 defense in the league? In some categories, they were top five. And coming into the year, we said, oh, this is a strength of the team. This is what's going to keep them in close games. And then Barmore got hurt. Judon got traded. I get it. But like week one, they only gave up 10 points to Cincinnati. They had that huge force fumble near the end zone by Kyle Duggar, that huge fourth down stop by Jonathan Jones. So you're like, all right, this is how they can win games. And then things started to decline against Seattle, whereas the bad situational execution. Then Juwan Bentley gets hurt. That awful tackling against the Jets on Thursday night. San Francisco blew him out. Miami only gave up 15 points, but again, some situational mistakes, a bunch of penalties as well, and it's just continued all the way through Houston scoring 41 on him. So I look at defensively and I'm thinking, all right, this is a unit that, let's be fair, no Barmore, no Bentley. Duggar's missed a couple games, or missed some time, I should say. But they should be better than this, and especially some of those run fits. Like, I mean, 250-yard runs allowed against Houston, that's awful. And so I just look at that unit as not living up to the talent there.
Look, offenses want to pass and run on the Patriots' defense. 24th in passing yards given up, the defense in the league, and then 20th in rushing attempts. So it's like, do you want to run? Do you want to throw? Either one is going to work. And in fact, it shows that the passer rating gradually increases as the game goes on against the Patriots. And then in terms of the run game, by the time you get to the fourth quarter, the teams are averaging over 5 yards a carry. And now, granted, if you give 250-yard runs, that's going to bulk up the average. But still, to give up 5 yards per carry as the game sometimes has been in the balance is absolutely poor. So I think more so on the defense, and maybe I don't want to say of a statement on the offense, but I really do wonder. We're being told it's a game time decision. I don't know if it's strategic or if it's a conversation piece about Ramondre Stevenson and his foot. It's the biggest mystery to me right now so far this season, because so much depends on he being the catalyst for the engine to go. If the run game is not there, then we've seen how many deficiencies the offensive line has shown itself. It's gotten better as the weeks have gone on, but it hasn't been anything great. Nothing that says, wow, that was nearly a clean game. But if you don't have the run game, again, Drake May had 38 rushing yards last week. Antonio Gibson had 19. So you can't have your quarterback being your leading rusher not named Lamar Jackson. And if Ramondre Stevenson is not a go, I do have to question, where is his relationship with this club and the culture of this team?
So you think it's more than just the injury?
Yeah, because you know the giveaway would be if he didn't travel with the team, then now that becomes the big story. Like, okay, why is he not with the team? So he had to travel with the team. But think about it. You weren't at practice all week. You finally step into on the field Friday, like right before you take off. Okay, I'll be out here. And then you're saying, it's a game time decision. Okay, so now we're down to a 90-minute window when you find out. This is why I also think the line hasn't moved at the 6, because they're thinking, like, if Ramondre Stevenson is not in there, then we're leaving this at 6. If Stevenson's in there, this is a game that could drop down to maybe 4, 4.5 points. So if he's a game time decision and then does not go, then you'd have to say, all right, he's been out of a commission for now a third week?
Yeah, well, because he was, benched to start the Miami game. He ended up playing, but right. Benched to start. Obviously missed last week. But I've kind of been wondering this a little bit, KJ. Mayo says guys are going to be, the starting lineup's going to be shuffled around.
Right.
But when he benched Stevenson, I mean, it was for one series, and then he put him back in? So is this going to be more harsh? Is he going to bench guys for a full game? Is there going to be a healthy scratch? Or is it going to be, hey, one possession, and then you're back in? Because it felt like, at least at first, it worked for Stevenson. He had that long run against Miami for the touchdown, and maybe it made a difference, but I don't know, for some other guys, especially younger players, does that send a too soft a message if it's only for one series? Do you need to go harsher than that? I find that piece interesting, because now that he's told us, hey, I'm going to make changes,
right.
Well, is it
who
really
the change?
Right. Who is it, and is it really a big change if it's for one possession? Right. Like, you know, like if I sit down Keon White for one possession, I'm just throwing his name out there. I'm not saying it's going to be him. But if I sit him down for just one possession, so what does he still have, 40 snaps or 50 snaps in the game? I mean, does it really make that big of a difference? So that's really what I'm wondering here, too, is not just who is it going to be, because I think there's some candidates on both sides of the ball, but is it going to be the Stevenson one possession type benching, or is it going to be something that's a little bit longer than that?
Yeah, I can't think it would be a just one possession thing again if there's still a thing. And I wonder if there's something going on with the player, how they may have felt about that. And how they're carrying themselves, right? Because we really haven't been able, has anybody been able to pinpoint like what with the foot has happened that's had him out for last week and potentially this week? Sometimes I say, might have turned an ankle or, landed wrong, or you can go back and look at a play, because that's part of our job, right? If a guy's out with a foot, we want to go back and watch the game to see where potentially it may have happened. So that way, hey, is this an ankle thing? Is this a fasciitis thing? That, people talking about journalism, that's the good journalism, right? Is where you go back and you notice something and then you ask a question based on something you noticed. Nobody's been able to ask that question because nobody's been given a hint of what happened, when it happened, how it happened, how it may affect him even being out potentially for a second straight week. And that would be a second straight week where you've started your rookie quarterback who needs some running help. I don't get it.
And if I remember correctly, there was a time, I think in the second half of the Miami game, maybe second quarter or in the second half, where he did get dinged up, but the whole vibe around it was like, this isn't that serious.
Right, because you played the next week.
And then he missed the next week against Houston. But he had played, I think, later on in that game against Miami after he had, quote-unquote, gotten hurt. So it's like then he misses the Houston game, and now it's doubtful for – so then part of me wonders – should he? Was it a more serious injury than we were led to believe, like it, or something like that? Like that's again, it just it felt like when there was the initial injury, it felt like oh, this isn't that big a deal. You know, this won't be a long term thing. This won't keep him out a while. And now we're talking about potentially his second consecutive missed game.
Yeah, I don't want this game to be on Mac, on Drake May's shoulders.
Oh, you almost said,
well, that's because he wears that same damn number. You know,
like sad flashback there.
Yeah, there you go. I don't want this to be on May's shoulders, right? And I think that's the idea. Yeah, oh, God, geez. But yeah, that's one of those situations where last week you knew what it was. This week it should be what it can be, right? This is the game where you want to see your rookie quarterback get a win. This is the week that you want to be able to say, hey, let's put him on display for the entire league to, or, you know, for a national audience to see. It's everybody's 9:30 game. I think it's on NFL Network for everybody who watches, right? This is the opportunity to showcase what you got and be part of that conversation of what you were able to do in a standalone game. I think Drake May and this team kind of need some positive attention. But if you got guys who are pouting, you know, the Jalen Polk and his comments and, you know, your boy can't get on the field. Baker can't get on the field for the most part. These are the things where I would say those who have this conversation about how much control of the locker room does Mayo have, I will give them oxygen on that conversation in that regard, because these are not top quality tier players in the NFL. You're literally talking about a squad and its record that pretty much match itself. If anything, you might say, the record is outperforming the squad. So this is one of those situations where you would say, hey guys, you're not in demand, high demand of other team services. Some players would be, but most of this roster would not be. And for that, you've got to outperform who you are at this point for the coach, for the fan base, and really just for the interest of entertaining football.
Yeah, the Polk situation is interesting to me because when he came out in the draft, I mean, hey, I like the pick. I still think he can be a good player. I looked at it as his long-term ceiling is to be a number two receiver, like a solid number two receiver in the NFL. And so far this year, I mean, they've targeted him 23 times and he's only got 10 catches, so less than 50% of the time he's catching the ball. Big drop against Houston that would have been a first down conversion. And then he comes out and he says, oh, it's not a mental thing, after Mayo had said it was a mental thing. And then he said, oh, I got the best hands in the league. Like, look, I want receivers to be confident. I do. I think that's a part of the position, but that didn't feel like confident. That felt like either defensiveness or just kind of I don't want to say delusional, but a little bit of delusion. Like when you
can't take constructive criticism.
Yeah, when Mayo says, hey, I think it's a mental hump thing, which a lot of times, honestly, when guys are dropping the ball, it is mental. And right. Mayo says that, and then he goes, oh, no, it's not mental. Like, I'm fine. It, like, well, are you fine? Like, because then.
Well, I think because the term mental has a stronger connotation for some nowadays than would be a normal conversation, just like, hey, you know, you've just got a mental block, you just got to get over it. And someone would say, what do you mean a mental block? And I have no problem. And they start going down this kind of rabbit hole of what you might be saying about them. And I would say, it's football, buddy. You know, if you're not catching the balls that are thrown to you, it's actually a physical block, okay, if you really wanted to say it. So it's almost like Jerod Mayo saying, hey, kid, we're still giving you a chance and we believe in your talent. Because if he said, it's like, look, if you can't catch the ball in this league, then you can't be in this league. Look, the greatest receiver of all time had, quote, a mental block at the start of his career. Jerry Rice couldn't catch a cold in the beginning, in the first six weeks of the season in his rookie year. Look what he became. I'm not saying Jalen Polk is going to be the next Jerry Rice, but anything is possible when you put your mind to it. And I think there's nothing wrong with telling a player that, like, hey, just refocus your mind to what's the task at hand and the greatness that we believe you have, because I think Jalen Polk can be a number one receiver. Why? Because if you look at all these guys from the second round, they've panned out to be these number one receivers. So you can be that guy if you put yourself into the moment by moment versus thinking about like what's being said or how it's being handled. You've already got another guy chirping who started chirping before the season even started. Remember, I'm going to show everybody who. Well, you haven't been able to show any of us, but that Twitter
can't
game is strong.
On the field.
Right. So this is one of those situations where if you're worried about image in the social media light, and this is the team you're on, it's not going to shine very well for you at all.
Yeah, and let's not forget those Polk comments came on the heels of him not pursuing the pick six play in San Francisco. Mm. Remember, he walked off the field early. Like,
effort.
And then his blocking, too, which, look, I'm a wide receiver nerd, so maybe that only interests me, but really inconsistent and at times subpar. And I know he's not the biggest guy. I'm not expecting him to pancake people, but sometimes it feels like I'll watch him block a bit. Is that really the best he can do? Like, is that really?
Well, as much as I joked you about the boringness of offensive line talk, you're absolutely right about wide receiver blocking. If you show me that effort there, other things are going to work out on your behalf. It's like you put in the hard work, good things happen, right? That happens in everything. But if you're not putting in the hard work or in the effort on the things that may not necessarily be your job, but is part of your duties on the field when you're between the lines and you're not doing it, well, then it's going to start affecting other things, right? So if you're not effectively blocking, you know, for the run game, or you're not, you know, making attempts to, you know, to help out, prevent a long gain on an interception, and you're just giving up, well, then most likely you're going to do the same thing when plays come to you. And that's what the numbers show. Like, if you're dropping over 50% of your balls, why am I throwing the ball to you?
Yeah, and it's a fair question. And you look at this receiver group now, I think their best three is Kayshon Boutte, Kendrick Bourne, and DeMario Douglas.
Yeah.
I mean, you have two rookie receivers. One of them you picked high in the second round.
And Boutte couldn't get on the field almost last year.
Exactly. And I look at the two receivers you drafted, including the one high in the second round. I'm like, they're not part of your top three. I mean, Baker, again, hasn't even gotten on the field. The only thing I remember about Javon Baker really is that deep drop pass against Philly in the preseason. Like, that's really it. So this is a receiver group that I think you and I can agree, right? Bottom half of the league talent-wise, but better
bottom
than last
third.
Year. Yeah, probably. Yeah, sure. Bottom quarter, I'll even give you. But I think better than last year, because last year Juju Smith-Schuster was just nothing, and I thought Devontae Parker was just a net negative. But better than last year, but still, it feels like you're not getting everything out of that group you should be getting. And part of that is the offensive line play being bad. Part of that is a quarterback change and the previous quarterback just being slow on reads and Jacoby Brissett. But it just feels like you're not getting everything out of that group. So I could see that being one of those areas where if Mayo wants to make an adjustment, maybe Jalen Polk is the guy, you know, that, or at least that group is part of it.
Yeah, because I think May showed last week that he can get these receivers open. He can
that
lead them to ball.
He basically threw them open.
There you go. So now it's like, okay, for all the complaints that you had before, it's really a new day for this wide receiver room, right? This is the quarterback of the future. You build the rapport with this guy. This may be the difference between whether you're a journeyman or whether you have a solid career tied to this guy, right? Like if you're Kayshon Boutte, you're a six-round guy, you barely saw the field last year. And wondered, and even he got on the socials and handles and tried to make a bit of his case and everything. But you know what? It's a new day for him. He'd tell you, you know what? That was last year. This is something totally different. So seize the moment. This is the opportunity for that receiver room to seize the moment. This is going to be the quarterback moving forward, at least for the next 3 to 5 years, and hopefully for the next 15 years. You really hope that these guys buy in now, because none of these guys are outside of Polk. I almost said I combined Baker and Polk. All these other guys are expendable immediately.
Yeah.
So make your case now, because as great as Pop Douglas has been for this team, he knows that, look, if it doesn't work out, they're going to be like, well, you know, he is a sixth rounder and this, that, and a third, and that team wasn't really that good. Is he really that performer? You hear in the NBA, like, even the worst team in the NBA has someone that averages, you know, 20 a game, right? So, like, you don't want to be seen as that. You want to be the person who's part of the growth with Drake May. So this is why I'm thinking, like, all that stuff about the line and all that stuff, that's now starting to become an excuse. That's been there all along. You know you have a better quarterback who can get you the ball, who's not going to hold on to it, who will make plays, who will scramble to help you get open and be able to make plays downfield. You should be celebrating and doing everything you can to support this quarterback versus running the lips or running your fingers on social.
And Kayshon Boutte's a guy that's really interesting to me, because in 2020, as a freshman at LSU, he was one of the best wide receivers in the country.
Right.
Then he has two ankle surgeries. There's some maturity questions. Let's not forget that sports gambling arrest thing last year. So there's questions there. But if he is fully recovered from those two ankle surgeries and he fits in this offense and he works well with Drake May, he could be a legit NFL receiver. And the early returns of Drake May last week were pretty good. I want to see, can he continue this? Because if, let's say he's good, then you know Kendrick Bourne's going to be part of the fold. And I think DeMario Douglas will be too. All of a sudden, for guys like Polk and Baker, well, that there's three surefire guys ahead of you. And that could, and I think Polk's going to be here for a few years, but that could put a guy like Baker's spot on the roster potentially in jeopardy, and Polk's snaps at the very least in jeopardy. So, like, again, because I think Bourne is kind of a lock to be out there, at least for now. I think Douglas is a lock.
Because he's the most veteran.
Yeah, and I think Booty, though, is the guy that if he continues on that track, like if that wasn't just a one-off against Houston and him and May are actually good together and we see a little bit of that guy that was one of the best freshmen as a freshman, one of the best receivers in the country in 2020, then all of a sudden, boom, that's your three receivers and 11 personnel, right? It's those guys. It's not Polk. It's not Baker. It's not anybody else. It's those three guys. So Booty's a guy that I really have my eye on, not just tomorrow, but really for the next three or four games. I think he's got a legit shot to carve out a starting role.
Well, remember, even looking forward, this team is going to try and go for a top-line wide receiver one because they made a couple of attempts. So you would say maybe even two spots are available. Now, if Kendrick Bourne decides to resign, I think that's a whole nother, question.
But I think in a great offense, Kendrick Bourne's probably like your third receiver. Like, you know, in a really great offense, he's probably maybe your second receiver, and he's your, but I'd say third, and Douglas is like your fourth guy, your slot, that Edelman role. And I know Edelman surpassed more than that in his time here, but like that role. So really, yeah, I mean, Booty could be your number two, and then T. Higgins, whoever, DK Metcalf is your one. So that, to me, long term, to add to your point, that's even fewer spots for some of these younger guys. So it's just, that's something I think to really watch over the next few weeks starting tomorrow.
KJ Lyons hanging out with you on a Saturday. WEEI 617-779-7937. Text line 37937. Still to come. Just a Jag next on WEEI.
This is not a real election ad.
KJ and Lyons bring forth a new nation in sports talk entertainment. A show that believes in appealing to the super smart down to the guy who still acts like a 10th grader.
I'm letting you know that I'm a damn werewolf.
The show that can tie everyday life and Boston sports like no other.
It's high-end stuff, KJ.
This election season, vote KJ and Lyons. A show for the people. By the people.
Yes, KJ and Lyons can. KJ and Lyons are doing a heck of a job. And yes, KJ and Lyons are bigly on sports. Read my lips. KJ and Lyons are the bee's knees.
Because it is you that KJ and Lyons work for.
I could care less about some kid in college right now.
You better care about him, KJ.
No, here's the thing.
Vote KJ and Lyons. A show for you, the people.
I'm KJ and I overdraft my account to pay for this ad.
This is not a real election ad.
We're back to KJ and Lyons on WEEI.
KJ and Lyons. WEEI, some of the political ads, I just love lines. I know there's one, I don't know what it is about it. It just touches my soul and just makes me want to go vote.
Which is, which one?
Oh, I'm not going to say because I don't want to push any political ads that are on the station. Yeah, just let them run.
There are some that are definitely better than others.
No, there's just one that just stands above all the rest. And it's a great ad. It moves the crowd, if you will. We're 2 minutes away here from Just the Jag here on WEEI. Let me read the apology from Christian Barmore that came out earlier today on Twitter, because clearly this is where kind of the story originated with some of the comments he made about his stop with Providence Police. Christian Barmore writes, "A few days have gone by since the incident with the Providence Police, and I've had a chance to deeply reflect on my behavior. I want everyone to know that I'm sorry and I take full accountability for my actions. I apologize to the Providence Police Department, my teammates, and my family. My mother was a police officer, and I understand the pressures related to their job." That's probably why she was so calm, like, "Christian, stop cursing." Because usually it's like, "Baby, no, don't."
Good point.
Yeah, right. Okay, back to his comments. "My mother was a police officer, and I understand the pressures related to their job, which I didn't make any easier by reacting in the manner that I did. I am using this as an opportunity to learn and do better. I have already met with members of the Providence Police Department to apologize in person. It is my hope that they accept my sincere apology. That meeting is just the first step of many that I'm taking on the route to self-improvement." I do have a question, John. When he met with the members of Providence Police Department to apologize, did he drive the same vehicle? I'm totally kidding.
Yeah, I hope all his registration and everything was in order. Maybe
I mean,
he took
you gotta
an Uber.
Find a little humor in it, yeah. But you know, like
I hope he maybe, took, maybe he took an Uber or a cab.
Maybe mom gave him a ride.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah, that's possible. Yeah, definitely.
But look, I think it's important to read that apology because a lot of time athletes, when they get in these blast situations, people want to hold it on like it's a scarlet letter, and I think people should really respect the effort that Barmore put forth in that apology, which was much louder than what he wrote when he first put the whole, you know, thing out on Twitter. And I think it's also a lesson, and maybe he's one of these guys that may head up one of these symposiums, right? That one, when you take it to social media, it can get really loud and get really ugly. And two, about being in compliance. It's for the basic things, right? Because the blessed thing in that is that it didn't escalate and become something even uglier, even as simple as he did not get arrested. So I really applaud Christian Barmore and those thoughts and his mom. She reached it. That's mommy of the year right there. Because if you heard us, what was that, John, on
Wednesday night, I think we talked about it
a lot. Wednesday we played the audio and how at the beginning of the audio, the clip that we played, you could hear Christian Barmore's mother asking Christian to stop cursing in this interaction with the police. And we were able to discuss how just in almost less than 2 minutes, how it really went from like 0 to 60 very fast. And we're just thankful that all parties, one, have gotten quiet about it, and two, that they've met in the middle to have a conversation. Like now that things have cooled down, this is one of the good stories that it's turned out, at least for Barmore and for the Patriots.
Yeah, and a couple things on that. You and I talked about this the other night, that the reason it became a big story was because he put it on social media. Like if he had just not done that, sure, we would have mentioned it and it would have been a story. It probably would have been in our trending update, but it wouldn't have been a whole two segments. You know, in a major
I don't even
story.
Know if it would have been. Like, how do you say in trending, Christian Barmore was cited for having plates that weren't, you know?
Yeah, like at max, that's what it would have been, right? So
I don't even think that would have even been reported.
And you may be,
I don't think I would have put it in if it wasn't a big thing.
So, in fair point. All right. So it wouldn't have even been there. So him putting it out there made it a bigger story, but I also give him a lot of credit because I think, as we know in society, nobody wants to admit they're wrong, especially publicly. And he came out and he was like, look, you know, I overreacted. And he knows from personal experience, given his mother's career, you know, how difficult that job can be. And I give him, you know, credit. It's not easy to publicly admit that you overreacted or publicly admit you were wrong in a situation. And he did that. And again, I agree with your sentiments that, you know, the situation could have ended worse, and I'm glad that it didn't. And I think it speaks to Barmore's mother and her kind of guidance in the moment, and also towards those officers for staying calm, which through most of the audio we heard, they were pretty reasonably calm. And it also speaks to Barmore for kind of reflecting on it and saying, hey, you know what? Maybe I did overreact here, and I want to make it right.
All right, 617-779-7937, text line 37937. That's how you reach us. KJ and Lyons here at WEEI, still to come, with everybody so excited about the 2004 Netflix Red Sox documentary. Some would argue 2004 is the greatest Red Sox story. I would say that 1986 is. I'll tell you why that's in minutes, but right now it's time for John's favorite.
Sorry that I said you were a Jag. Just a guy.
Oh, he's just a Jag. Not great, not bad. Doesn't stand out on the field.
He might suck.
Oh, he's just a Jag. Not great, not bad. Just a guy out on the field.
Alrighty. Kicking off what some people, not me, but some people, are calling the best segment in radio.
My favorite part of that is during the intro, you just hear KJ's voice in the background. It's like, he might suck. Like I laugh at that every time.
It's called little ad-libs.
Yeah, that was a good one.
Yeah, I like the ad-libs.
Yeah, that's what people say when they listen to our show. He might suck.
It's like listening to Migos.
He might suck.
Focus, gentlemen,
sorry,
focus.
Sorry,
these
Zach,
are guys
Zach,
who
Zach,
might be on the hot seat. Zach, take it away.
DK Metcalf.
Yeah, I agree. I think if I'm the Patriots, this is a guy I go hard after in the offseason. I've been saying this for, I feel like, 5 months now. That's a team that drafted Jaxon Smith-Njigba in the first round. Metcalf's contract is going to get bigger. Patriots missed on getting him in 2019. Like, that's a guy, if I'm the Patriots, I go all in after.
Yeah, I think he's going to be a Jag this week. There's been something going on between him and the coordinator. You've seen the screaming on the sidelines. Seattle's lost three in a row. I think DK Metcalf has started to check out, as you mentioned, John, with Smith and Digba being drafted as well. I think that's kind of affected him, plus Tyler Lockett still gets targets. DK Metcalf could be a Jag this weekend.
Just a guy.
Alrighty, next up, the guy throwing him the ball, Geno Smith.
Could he be a Jag this week, John?
I don't think so. Like, Geno's what? Isn't he leading the NFL in passing yards? Like, he's legit. Like, he's having a great... Shout out to him. By the way, another one of those Jets draft pick quarterbacks that's having a good year or good career somewhere else, like Sam Darnold.
I'm going to say Geno Smith may have a Jag weekend. In spite of the high, I think Kirk Cousins and him are going to duel it out. But at the end of the day, if they lose four straight, we're getting into Jag territory. Geno Smith may be a Jag this week.
Just a guy.
He is leading the league.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Yeah, good for him.
He is, but I mean, I'm talking about this week.
No, I was just...
Yeah, it's because he played the Patriots in week two.
former Patriot staffer Brian Daboll.
This week?
Yeah, look, something's off there in Philly. But I still think they're better than the Giants, and they're going to win. Love Daboll. Sneaky candidate for Patriots offensive coordinator next year, by the way. Stick that in your back pocket.
Yeah, Daboll's showing himself to be just the guy. And look, all the sexiness with Buffalo has not really translated overall with the Giants. I know you're like, maybe he comes back here to be the offensive coordinator. No, he might be one of those guys talking on TV for a year trying to figure it out. He's heading to Jag territory this weekend, I think.
It's the first time I've heard sexiness in Buffalo in the same sentence.
Well, so maybe it's cold outside.
First and last, probably. All right, next up, a guy who might be coaching for his job tomorrow morning in London, Doug Peterson.
Yeah, it's crazy because he won a Super Bowl against Brady and Belichick, albeit Belichick helped him a little by not playing Malcolm Butler. And then he gets blown out of Philly.
It was a personal matter between Bill and the player.
Yeah. And then he gets blown out of Philly, though, just a few years later. Things look better in Jacksonville. Remember they had the comeback win against the Chargers in the playoffs? And I think he's a Jag. I think he's a high-low guy. Like, I think he'll have a great, great year, like in 2017 or a couple years ago. But then he'll have these low years. So I guess you even it out. The guy's a Jag.
Just a guy.
Here's the thing with Doug Peterson, right? It was Nick Foles that kind of saved him because Carson Wentz was garbage or gotten hurt. Carson Wentz ends up being garbage, and now Trevor Lawrence is starting to have a stench to him. Doug Peterson, Jag material right now.
Just a guy.
KJ, you just mentioned him. Next up, Trevor Lawrence.
You know what? He's got to save his coach's job. I think he'll be more than a Jag this weekend. I don't know if it'll be enough to save his job. So this week, Trevor Lawrence, I think, outperforms the Jag status that's been placed on him before.
Yeah, I would agree. And also, the Patriots defense, we talked about it earlier in the show, not playing that well. I mean, maybe they'll play a little bit better, but C.J. Stroud just carved him up. So I think Lawrence can maybe not carve them up, but I agree with you, be better than a Jag tomorrow.
All right, next, Zach.
Anthony Richardson.
Hate to say it, man. That dude's a Jag. And you know what it is? It's not even all his fault. He just gets hurt all the time. Yeah. And he was a guy that we had discussions here about sitting Drake May. That's a dude that should have sat for like a whole year. I mean, he had below 50% completion percentage in college. They played him right away. I think he's just, again, a Jag through and through. It's not all his fault, but I think he is.
Just a guy.
You know, I'm with you right there, but I would turn that G from guy to gimp. You're absolutely right. The guy can't stay in the field. So he's just a gimp guy.
Just a guy.
It's a Jag with two G's, like thick with two C's.
Next, Zach.
Head coach of the Cincinnati Bengals, Zach Taylor.
That's the toughest one, I think, so far. I mean, the dude went to a Super Bowl. They've beaten the Chiefs in key situations. But you know what? How many years in a row? What is it? Every year since 2019, they've been 0-2 or worse to start the year, or 2020. I could be wrong on one of those. Like, at some point, you got to look at the head coach for that. I mean, I think he's a Jag.
Just a guy.
Yeah, I'm going with you. Plus, if there's one team that's a pebble in the shoe for Cincinnati, it's been Cleveland over the last couple of years. And if they're pebbling their shoe again this week, Zach Taylor, just a guy.
Just a guy.
Next.
Guy who may or may not be getting benched, Justin Fields.
I go Jag here. I mean, he doesn't suck. As KJ said in the intro, he might suck. He doesn't suck. But He feels better than he was in Chicago, but I just don't think he's that good.
Just a guy.
I mean, if you say he might or might not get benched, that would be like the poster child of this entire segment. Yeah. Oh, he's just a Jag. Not good, not bad. He's just the guy on the field. Maybe.
Just a guy.
Next.
Ramondre Stevenson.
He's better than a Jag. I know there's an injury and maybe there's something else going on there, but he's better than a Jag.
Hey, the best ability in the NFL is availability. And if this guy's not available, I got to move him to Jag status.
Just
hit it.
Yeah, fair
here's,
point.
Here's why. Some of these runs that he's broken off after contact, great. But we still can't forget 4 weeks of fumbles in a row. 2 weeks potentially of not being there. He's just a ghost at this point. It almost feels like, boy, this G letter is, I'm making Sesame Street proud.
It is Halloween time, right?
It is. There you boo hoo. Next.
Newest New York Jet, Devontae Adams.
Listen, they got a lot of problems with the Jets. I think Rodgers is in Jag territory. Devontae Adams is a freaking stud. He's going to have a good game, and I think he's going to be good with the Jets. I don't know if it'll be enough for them to salvage their season, but he's above a Jag.
Au contraire, mon frere. What a bean burrito move to pull. Like, not only do you just leave because you had a hamstring issue the last couple of weeks, but you're ready to go suddenly and probably have the little mini Taco Bell thing in Aaron Rodgers' house. Dude, that is total Jag material. I don't think they'll get on the same page, and I think the noise gets louder in New York just because Devontae Adams and Aaron Rodgers won't be able to click right away against Pittsburgh.
Just a guy.
Three more.
The guy throwing him the ball, Aaron Rodgers.
Jag.
No. Jag.
Yeah, I don't even think we have to really discuss that one. I think he's been a pure Jag for 2 years now.
Just a goofball, my goodness.
Yeah,
he's
true.
Goofy. At this point, he's goofy. All right, next.
Tyreek Hill.
Oh.
He's better than a Jag. That's, I think, been a quarterback issue. He's on the field, he's better than a Jag.
This week?
I think he will be. Again, I think the talent is there. I know it's. You can tell I'm wavering on this, but it's.
I was going to say you sound like a person who's undecided when there's really no such thing as an undecided.
Like that Colts defense, I'm not a huge believer in them stopping Tyreek Hill, so I'm going to put him above a Jag, and it's in a dome, right? Yeah, they're at Indy.
I'll give Tyreek Hill a break this week, but I mean you're running your mouth about Jay Cutler, who has nothing to do with the league anymore. The focus is there, not so much. So I'm going to give him a pass this week, and finally.
Dolphins head coach Mike McDaniel.
You know what? Jag. Let's think about it. What, 2 years in a row they've started 4-0 or 5-0 and they faded down the stretch. They went out in the playoffs with a whimper against Kansas City last year. I know that game wasn't a blowout, but it never felt like they were really in it. And you know what, Zach and KJ, good coaches to me, are able to adapt when injuries happen. Have they really adapted that well since Tua went down? I don't think so. So I'm going to look, fun story, funny guy, cool offensive scheme designs, but as an overall head coach, I got to go Jag.
Just a guy.
You know what, Mike McDaniel? Great Jerry Curl, horrible coaching adjustments. Jerry Curl as a guy, Mike McDaniel's a Jag.
Just a guy.
And that's Just a Jag. The Week 7 Hot Seat, KJ and Lions continues next. WEEI 617-779-7937. Text line 37937. We talk Major League Baseball playoffs. And is the Red Sox 2004 the greatest story? Next.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.